Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. Welcome to another PI World interview in May 2021. And I'm delighted to be here today with David Thornton, who's editor at Growth Company Investor, who's had a really busy results period. And we wanted to catch up on which companies have been catching his attention. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks very much indeed for having me, Tamsin.
So what's been the general theme of results during the period?
Thanks, Tamsin, and thanks again for having me. I've interviewed nearly 130 companies since the turn of the year, so I've had a very broad experience of what the market's been saying about last year, COVID, and how it's coped with that, and afterwards. And there are a few themes which have really struck me. I think one is to say that in general, results have been very good indeed. Okay, in a lot of cases, companies have either lost money or certainly lost a lot of revenue, but they've, I think, coped with the emergency extremely well. I also think the government schemes have been a huge help. I mean, that really has come through. I think the government actually does deserve a lot of credit for the Chancellor for the both the furlough scheme, but also deferring taxes and so on. And as a result of that, there's been very little financial distress. I mean, normally during a really steep recession and a shock like this, you'd expect some companies to be caught out, and I think it's Buffett's words about the tide going out and finding out who's swimming naked, and actually everybody had their trunks on because we've seen very little, I think, financial distress as well. So generally speaking, it's been a very reassuring results season, and I think management are still, I think, very sensibly cautious in their guidance about 2021. They're unwilling, I think, to be too upbeat. And who knows, we could have an awful variant which upsets the apple cart and is vaccine resistant or something, although we don't really want to think about that. But that's the sort of thing that could happen. And therefore, management don't really want to sort of go out on a limb. But my sense is they're actually a lot more upbeat about prospects than they're prepared to say in an RNS statement, or that they're prepared to sanction in their guidance when they're talking to their brokers about forecasts for the coming year. So as a result of that, I'd expect to see some pretty decent upgrades to profit forecasts across the board as we progress through 2021, and that confidence is allowed to build. Of course, that's always subject to the vaccine effectiveness and variants of COVID and so on. And from that, I just want to sort of make one other point at a top-down level before we talk about individual companies. And that's to state the obvious, that we are in a recovery. We'll see some very strong growth this year. We're going to see some upgrades, a lot of upgrades. And that really does push you towards value stocks rather than highly rated growth stocks. Really, value and recovery, I think, is a theme I'd very much want to continue to run with, at least for the for the time being. On top of that, and this is something I've written about a lot in Growth Company Investor in the last sort of 4 or 5 months or so, is the threat of rising inflation and what that might mean for bond yields, and in turn what that might mean for growth stocks, which would be negative. It might also cast a bit of a negative pall over the market as a whole, but I think a safe place to hide and to focus on is the value theme, where we've got momentum in terms of recovery behind us. We've also got a degree of protection from low valuations. So I'd be very much looking to sort of stick with the value theme as we go through this year. So those are sort of a few thematic thoughts before we talk about individual stocks.
And which companies have drawn your attention?
Well, I've tried to sort of choose stocks which I think are interesting in their own right, but also tie in with perhaps some broader themes. And one of them is a company I've followed for quite a few years now, Mission. It was called Mission Marketing. It's now called the Mission Group. And it's always looked rather lowly valued and has been a bit of a re-rating candidate. Now, obviously, as a marketing services and advertising agency, it got hit pretty hard last year. I think the first costs that were cut were the travel and entertaining budgets, and advertising and marketing was probably put on hold pretty soon thereafter. So it was a rotten year, as you can see. Sales were down 24%. And yet, despite that, the company managed to stay in profit. They were helped by things like the furlough scheme and, as I said, government support. But they did turn a modest profit, which, considering the fact that costs in these agencies, at least in the short term, are semi-fixed, is a pretty impressive performance. And I think one of the things that have held the company's valuation back over the years has been the fact that they're quite comfortable carrying debt. Not an excessive amount, but they've always tended to have up to sort of 2x leverage because they like acquiring businesses and growing that way. And they've demonstrated their ability to pay down debt. But I think it's something which the market had always perhaps been a little bit concerned about. And if you were ever going to get caught out, in other words, swimming naked with too much debt on your balance sheet, it was last year. And actually, the mission managed to bring debt down quite considerably and ended the year only with, I think, £1 million net debt, down from something like, I think it was about 8 or 9 million the previous year. So terrific ability to release cash during last year. Now, that's going to rebuild this year. But I think any concerns that we had about the debt in this company, been allayed by last year's performance. So there's a natural, obviously, recovery scope here, particularly the Think BDW agency, which is focused on the housing market. They provide a sort of one-stop solution for house builders who are launching a new development. They do everything from designing the show home to digital marketing of it and so on. And that accounted for 30% of their earnings in 2019 and was in loss last year because housing had that hiatus and so on. Now, given the strength of the housing market, that should come roaring back this year. So, again, I think this is a stock where we should hope to see some upgrades. Looking at the forecast in the table there, the brokers have it making revenues of £75 million next year compared to £81 million in 2019, which looks an extremely low bar for them to jump over. And even on that modest forecast, the PE is only 10 times. So I think with upgrades, likely an argument for a re-rating given the performance last year, I think this is a very nice idea for the next couple of years.
And going from a low PE of Mission, I think you're moving on to one that's got quite a high PE.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Traxys is a software company. And so, unsurprisingly, it sells on a high multiple. And, 5 minutes ago was extolling the virtues of value stocks. So you might as well know what you're doing here. But this is a growth stock, but with very much a recovery angle to it. Half the business is software focused the railway industry. And that's growing very nicely. It should be growing close to double digit over the long term. Last year, I think it was only up, most recent period, about 5%, but they had some contracts which didn't sign until just after. And they've got a lot of growth opportunities to shoot for in that business. The other half of it is still related to transport and traffic, and it's data analysis, traffic surveys, traffic management around events and so on. And obviously that business just disappeared last year during COVID because big events were cancelled. And on top of that, you need to have normal traffic patterns to count visitors to shopping centres or carry out traffic surveys and so on. So that business just went away to a large extent. So there's a natural recovery to come through from that. And the table there is quite interesting because it's a July year end. So the 2021 number is actually going to be very quickly historic. So we're almost on to the 2022 year. when, as you can see, there's going to be a good recovery in sales and earnings, forecast to recover quite nicely. And that drops the PE to sort of low to mid-20s. So in the current market context, that's not bad value for a software company. But one aspect I do like with this one is the new management. The company had been run for many years by John MacArthur, who was a founder. It was very deal-driven. And I think he'd put together a collection of related and coherent businesses and made sense for them to be within the same group. But there wasn't really much effort to get them working together as a group of companies and derive the benefits from being part of a bigger whole. And the new management team is very focused on driving that through while retaining the entrepreneurial spirit of the individual businesses. And they also have an ambition to make an acquisition or two further to both expand the geographic scope of the business and to get the sales base up close to 100 million, where I think it would get on the radar of many more investors and institutions. And as I say, that 24.8 multiple for soon to be the current year, could quite easily drop into the teens the year after. And if they do manage to pull off an interesting looking acquisition, then I think this could be an extremely interesting stock. And as you can see from the chart, just made a new high after the recent results.
Thank you. And next we move on to Quicksand, I think, who were a real darling share and then had a really tough time, particularly during COVID. Tell us more.
Well, yes, I think it is a very interesting one because it's a COVID recovery story, but also, as you say, there's more on the table from previous issues. The high for revenues was, as you can see there on the second bullet point, was 115 million of sales and 26 cents of earnings back in 2018. And they had a few problems in 2019 when their biggest customers tripped up a bit and they lost some business. And so they had a few issues to deal with. But historically, it had been a good growth company and particularly cash generative. Always very interesting companies that can both grow and generate cash at the same time. And they occupy a particular niche. They make the middleware, which makes gaming machines work. I mean, those big sort of clever one-armed bandits and so on you get in Las Vegas casinos and so on. And there is an existing customer base. There's also scope to grow through outsourcing because it's a way that the major gaming machine manufacturers can save money and focus their efforts on inventing good games if they outsource a lot of the electronic wizardry to a specialist like Quicksand. So that's a case for them. Now, obviously, last year was not a great year for the casinos, since they were shut an awful lot of the time, and that put a lot of pressure, obviously, on the purchasers of machines and the machine manufacturers themselves, who are Quicksand's customers. Now, business is starting to come back. Spoke about a healthy order intake when I interviewed them after the recent results. Now they say the first half budgets are 106% covered. Bit of a bugbear of mine because this sort of language, because, and actually I use this to inspire the editorial that I've just written for the next issue of Growth Company Investor about communication to the market of earnings forecasts and so on. First off, budget's 106% covered, but they don't tell us what those budgets are, and the guidance, they haven't given any guidance to their brokers yet. So the numbers in the table are guesstimates from their brokers. But anyway, at least 106% covered rather than 85% covered. So I mean, it's a good thing, and it kind of implies that the business is at least coming back. It's a straightforward recovery play on the industry coming back. It's a cash generative business. They've got $17 million of net cash in the balance sheet, so that's not an issue. They also have a profitable displays business called Densitron, which they acquired a few years ago, which has been I wasn't convinced, to be perfectly frank, when they bought the business. Half the management team used to work for it, so it was quite an interesting thing to them to go back to. At least they knew what they were getting into. They're hopeful that will become a more of a growth business, but during the last year at least, it generated some cash for them and helped shore up what is both the core business and the valuable bit. So the PE ratios there, they do look very high. Their recovery is sort of multiples. But, you know, we're looking at these forecasts, looking for $75 million of sales in 22, and they made 115 in 2018. And, you know, why can't they make $115 million again? Well, of course they can. So that would, you know, drop the multiple, you know, towards, you know, low double digit, if not lower. So I think it's a very, very interesting recovery play, because it's a company which was highly regarded and very highly rated when the wind was at its back. So hopefully, you know, that will return, and you know, we can get some decent returns from this one. And it's a very encouraging chart pattern as well. So I'm quite encouraged by it.
And are you expecting it to return to those sort of levels 23 and beyond, or are you expecting it to beat in the meantime?
I think we'll get a clearer picture of what management think about things in terms of forecasts, I think probably with the half year, or maybe at the with the interim results, or with the trading update at the half year. I think that's when they hope to sort of reinstate formal guidance to their brokers. We'll get a clearer picture then. But there's nothing. It's not like the industry's gone away, or the industry's changed, or they've sold a business or something like that, which means that $150 million isn't attainable at all. I would imagine there's every reason why they can get back to that sort of level after a, you know, what's obviously been a very difficult couple of years.
And moving on to your next pick is Belvoir, the franchise estate agents. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, what interested me about this one, and it's a company I know quite well. I've spoken to them many times over the years, and always thought they were very sensible, and it was a very nice little business. And it always struck me as being just too lowly rated. I mean, it used to trade on a sort of single figure PE and a yield of sort of 7, and we thought, well, this is actually quite a nice business. And we're actually seeing a re-rating, and it's quite interesting, because you'd have thought, given the problems last year in the estate agency world, property transactions were well down, despite strong underlying demand, because of COVID and holdups in completion and so on. Their business has sailed serenely on, as you can see from the table there. 21.7 million of sales last year, compared to 19.3 the year before, a nice increase in profit. They paid, they had deferred their final dividend, I think, from 2019 because of COVID, but they paid that out at the end of the year because, you know, they could see the business was very strong. The core business, the original business, is a lettings agency. The lettings book has just been extremely robust, and it's an annuity like business. I think they manage something like 55,000-60,000 properties on behalf of landlords, and the fees just roll in year after year. Smaller agencies have been struggling because of increased regulation, and it's an area the government have been putting lots more sort of regulation and legislation into. So they've got a very solid annuity-like business there. It's also run as a franchise model. So although, yes, they do share some of the pain at the centre, the franchisees are in the front line very much on costs and managing their overheads when things turn down like they did last year. So the franchise model deserves a bit on the rating as well. In terms of growth, they've been expanding the estate agency side, the sales side of the business. Now, obviously, that's lower quality, more cyclical, but over a whole cycle, having some estate agency sales is definitely going to help grow the business and be a good thing to have. There's been a big push into financial services as well, which again lends itself to the franchise approach, with self-employed in the main, sales agents who are advising on mortgages and loans for buy-to-lets, for example. And they, you know, slot nicely into the branch network, and they've more than doubled their base of advisors over the last 12, 18 months. I think they're over 200 advisors now. So, you know, there's good growth there. And if you look at that chart, I mean, I think the market is finally coming around to the idea that actually this is a very nice little growth stock, very solidly based with that annuity stream and the franchise model. And yet, despite that good performance, you know, it's still, yes, it's more expensive than it was, but it's still selling on, you know, a relatively modest valuation. You also pick a better 3.5% yield. So it's one I like, and it's an example of a company which has sailed through COVID and last year, despite being exposed to a sector in housing which you'd expect to perhaps had a trickier time. And, you know, as I say, I think the re-rating can go on a bit longer.
And why Belvoir rather than the Property Franchise Group?
I've spoken to Property Franchise Group over the years and also interviewed them recently. And I could very easily TPFG is slightly different. They've got less financial services exposure. They're looking to increase that. I think Belvoir's a bit ahead of them on that. But they also have an interesting hybrid agency called YouMove, which is a sort of hybrid digital bricks and mortar or non-virtual real world sort of agency, and which is that they seem to be making a go at, and that's quite an interesting development. So I mean, they're both good, interesting companies, and I'd certainly wouldn't put anybody off TPFG either.
Thank you. And I think we're moving on to Medica next. What do they do?
Well, Medica's, in a way, falls into the same category here as Traxys. It's as you can see, it's more highly rated. It's very much a growth stock in the healthcare sector. But it also has a very strong and very easy to see recovery element to it. They provide outsourced medical imaging services to hospitals. Biggest market at the moment is the UK, so the NHS is it's a very big customer, and there's a shortage of radiologists in the NHS, so you can end up having to wait for a non-urgent x-ray interpretation or MRI scan interpretation. You could end up waiting, you know, rather longer than is ideal. So Medica have a bench, as it were, of expert radiologists, qualified radiologists, who they send images to, cases to. They interpret them and then do the report and send it back. Now, there are two aspects of the business. There's Nighthawk, which you can see from the third bullet point there. I say Nighthawk urgent cases robust. Nighthawk is the 24-hour response. So if you go into A&E at 11 o'clock at night, you have your scans, whatever, to, you know, find out what, you know, have you had a stroke, for example. Nighthawk, if there's no capacity in that hospital to interpret that scan, then, you know, Nighthawk will turn it around very quickly for the hospital. So that's a high margin, high priced service. Those urgent cases held up very well. But the big drop, obviously, which we all know about, has been in elective procedures, less urgent procedures. And there's an enormous backlog and waiting list. I mean, 4.7 million backlog NHS elective cases. Actually, Medica's management told me they think, as the year goes on, that's going to rise to very close to 7 million from what their contacts in the NHS say, and so on, which is quite scary, really. So what is going to happen? There won't be a big, huge spike. What will happen is that the elective cases will recover, and then I think stay at a very high level while they work through this backlog for quite a long time. Now, Medica, one of their challenges is to grow their capacity, so sign up more consultants and so on to be able to respond to at its capacity, and I think they've increased the capacity by 13% over the last year. And they're also expanding internationally, which opens up new markets, but also, if they're correctly qualified, increases their capacity, because you could send a scan from a local hospital in Stevenage, for example, you could transmit it to somebody in Melbourne, Australia, to do the report on it and send it back. But one other aspect as well is that a particular hospital might not have the expert in a specific disease category, whereas Medica's network will be able to direct a particularly sort of specialist scan to an appropriate expert in that. So that's in a way a bit of value add rather than just managing a backlog. And they've also just made an interesting acquisition in the US, relatively small but profitable, and that gives them a lead into scanning and imaging for research trials, so drug research trials. So they provide services to CROs, contract research organisations, who conduct clinical trials. So it takes them into a slightly new market there. And also has that ability to expand and make better use of the network. So it's a growth company. I expect it to be able to grow double digit organically. But also we've got this, enormous sort of tailwind of recovery as we work through these cases. And, these cases have to be, it has to happen. They have to be worked through. So I'd expect, again, upgrades and a tailwind with this one, and seeing the stock there on a 17.5x multiple for 22, for me that looks pretty attractive, even without upgrades, given the sector that it's in and the sort of visible growth opportunity that it has.
And talking of upgrades, we're just about to move on to one that has just upgraded. You're going to talk about Somero, aren't you?
That's right. I mean, this is obviously a fan favourite, as it were. It's very popular with private investors, I know, and I've held the stock personally since about 2013, and it's a super company. The first bullet point I put there, just to reinforce what I was saying at the start, that company guidance is very conservative. And I spoke to management in March on the results, and I remember saying to the team there, really nice guys, when you say to them, come on, chaps, this is a bit, this isn't a very high bar, surely. And they were, they made all those sort of, cautious noises that are perfectly reasonable to make. I mean, you don't want management to be gung-ho. But after the first sort of 4 months, they've had to come out and issue an RNS upgrading guidance, and upgrading it quite significantly. Because the business has come back very strongly, particularly in the US, and it has slightly unfortunately become an increasingly a US-centric story. The US market is over 70% of their business, and I think the US economy is going to boom this year. It's probably going to overheat given the policy, which ties me back into my worries about inflation and bond yields further down the line. But short term, they've certainly got a good market to be operating in. They've been releasing interesting new products just to expand the footprint into adjacent fields, which they weren't really addressing at the moment. And it's another situation where back in the financial crisis. It was a smaller business, but it really did have a tough time then. I mean, obviously, construction was really slaughtered, so you'd expect it. But it's always had a bit of a lower rating than it should have because of this nagging doubt about cyclicality and so on. But, as you can see from the slide deck there, I mean, last year it was pretty much flat sales during a period when construction sites were compromised, and people probably weren't, the customers probably, decided not to hold off on CapEx and so on. And yet they still managed to deliver a very solid solid year. So I think, again, you know, that argues for a bit of a re-rating, which we are kind of seeing. But, you know, if they can get the overseas business humming, then, you know, there's going to be another big leg in it, I think. But that's a bit of an if. But I did want to sort of end on this one because it just tied me back to how we started, just thinking about the conservative nature of guidance and forecasting, and that we're already seeing some companies having to come out and upgrade.
David, thank you very, very much indeed. Can you tell us where listeners can find you and how they can find out more about Growth Company Investor?
Yes, I mean, the website, growthcompany.co.uk, is the place to go to. You can download a copy of Growth Company Investor, which is published monthly from the homepage, a sample copy of it. And there's more information there about what we do and how we think about the markets and think about stocks and so on. I'm also on Twitter, although I keep saying I ought to use it more. I don't really. But if anybody has any questions, I mean, feel free to email me at editor@growthcompany.co.uk.
Tremendous. And I'm thrilled to say that you've picked up on four companies that we've actually covered with either an interview or an investment presentation, from Mission, from Traxys, from Quicksand, from Somero. So you did very well to pick companies that we've also been following as well. So thanks very much indeed for that.
There was no collusion, which we should say. That's good to know.
Absolutely. And to all our viewers, you'll find many more educational interviews like this on piworld.co.uk, both as a video and as a podcast. Many thanks for listening and stay well. PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.